Everything's against me and it's got me down. If I jumped in the river, I would probably drown. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive. These shabby shoes I'm wearing all the time, they're full of holes and nails. Brother, if I stepped on a worn-out dime, I bet a nickel I could tell you if it was heaven or hell.
Lemon face.
Yeah.
Ooh,
all right. The response at festivals was very fucking enthusiastic so far.
Oh, really? Okay.
IMDb thing. I mean, again, it's early, but it's pretty fucking well received so far. IGN, dude. Late Night with the Devil comes out later this month.
Yep.
Imaginary comes out this weekend.
Oh! So that's probably going to be... Okay, we'll get a little slate going. And then I just wanted to touch real... I mean, do we need to talk about this on the show proper? The upcoming blockbuster trash. Can we just go there real quick? This Kong Godzilla, this gay-ass Planet of the Maze Runner apes, the Ghostbusters frozen trash, the you don't face your fears, you ride them twisters.
Yeah.
Like, fucking, this is not the way to resuscitate Hollywood in the wake.
This is, like, going to be one of the...
Of Dune 2 and Oppenheimer.
It's kind of crazy. It's like, this year, much like last year, is like a year of, like, cinema and super epic movies like Dune 2. But it's got to be a balance, you know what I mean? It's like this yin-yang thing. You got to have the fucking ultimate trash to, like, balance it out.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's fucking true. And they're like, less comic book movies. They don't like comic book movies. Here, have this shit instead.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Like, here's a bunch of sequels to, like, fourth tier franchises.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus Christ.
That Ghostbusters trailer looks something awful, it's, man.
Dude, all of the, like, comedic, like, beats up, like, I'm like, dude.
I mean, look.
I can't stand it.
And it's like, it's one of the, it's such a nitpicky thing, but, like, there's a fucking fish ghost, dude. Like a serpent ghost.
Like the eel ghost.
Yeah, and it's like, come on, man. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Fuck you, dude.
Yeah, fuck you, dude. And then, you know, he gets slimed, right? And then he goes, yeah. And that's the end of the trailer. Because that's fucking cool, dude.
You know what else is fucking cool?
What?
The new episode of this show that we're about to start.
Oh.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Coaster Podcast, episode 409. Holy shit.
We'll be at 500 before we know it.
Maybe by the time we release the next four episodes, we'll have hit 500.
Oh, dude, why do you gotta say that?
Come on, guy. Anyways, this is Jorge. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Chris Stuckman, more like Chris Cuckman. This is Reed.
And this is Jacob.
And that's it.
That's it.
That's episode 409. So we had a nice substantial discussion before the show proper here about a few things.
Uh-huh.
But for the show proper as well, I want to mention that we as a family went and saw a band in L.A., last weekend, called Squid, a crankwave band from England, and they were fantastic.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I didn't know that was the first time you two have been stuck in a car together that long.
Since fucking high school, with a high school band trip, like on a fucking bus.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the longest car drive adult versions of us have ever been on together.
I do want to thank you. I've done a lot of inner work about this. I want to thank you for introducing me to Google Play, because it's changed my life and I'm a much safer driver now.
Oh, you mean CarPlay?
Yes.
Yes.
Not Google. What the fuck? Can you take that out? Yes, CarPlay.
Oh, dude. It's life-changing, brother. Yeah. I'm telling you.
It's good.
There were some kinks to iron out in the first 5 minutes of the drive. I'm not going to lie when I say it. I was a little worried.
No.
You had two GPSs.
I was like, what's going on?
My man's, the way he fucking used to navigate is fucking absurd. It's crazy.
So Jorge got in the car, because I'm coming from like the Trooper, which was not a modern fucking car, and navigating like that. And then going, anyway, long story
it's overwhelming. Short. There's a lot of fucking tech with these new. I don't have a car that new, and there's a lot of bells and whistles and shit.
It's just like fucking. Jorge gets in the car and he's like, hold on, are you fucking navigating? Are you holding your phone while you're driving?
I was like, dude, I've been in Ubers like that and it's fucking crazy.
Yeah, and then it took a minute, And it's a lot better.
It is a lot better.
You figured it out.
I appreciate that.
And yeah. You're a great driver. And I appreciate and I appreciate, because, dude, if I'm stuck in a car for 2 hours with someone I've never driven before, I don't know what to expect.
But yeah. You could be fucking dead right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was great, though. And no, but thank you for being our DD also. Yeah, Jorge and I had a chance to drink. And
I wish you guys had drank more once the show was over. I'm like, are you guys going to like get some booze before we go?
If it wasn't, motherfucker, if it wasn't LA, I would have been down, yeah. but like I'm like, if I drink more now, I'm gonna fall asleep in this fucking vehicle.
Yeah,
that's cool. I could put on fucking,
could put on Tool, dude.
I could put on Tool anyway, because it's road music.
Yeah,
but yeah, we had a lot of fun. We ate a good burger at a place called Burger District, mm-hmm. with a horror iconography logo.
Oh, so you know they're gonna love it.
Yep. So yeah,
no Donovan, unfortunately.
No Donovan. He was busy and he had to work the Squid Games, not the band, the Squid Games challenge,
the experience
thing or something. He's a listener of the show who's also a bar back up there. I went and saw this band the night before called this dude, not a band, a guy named Contravoid, which was dope at the Casbah. Mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. was fun. He had a CD release party in LA.
CD's nuts.
We could have saw his nuts, but instead we were seeing Squid's nuts. But there he was, dude. He was in the same city, dude.
Oh, synchronicity, dude.
Yeah, dude. LA. who would fucking think that there's more than one band playing?
Wow.
What else is going on?
Not much.
That's it?
Yeah.
Just big movie releases, you know, or one big movie release.
Which?
And one big show release. It's been quite a week. This past week, it's overwhelming with, I'm like, what do I obsess with my obsessive thing where a movie comes out and I got to hype up about it and watch a million things. There's two of these that came out, and we got Shogun on Hulu. It's breaking records. And then we have fucking Dune 2 in theaters, breaking records. And it's overwhelming for my fucking dork ass.
Is Shogun releasing episodes on a weekly basis?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think every Monday.
So you've seen one so far or two?
I've seen all three. The third episode.
There's three?
So two came out on the premiere, which was necessary because of, you know, it took time to warm up. And then the third one just came out the other day. Yeah.
How's it going?
Fucking awesome. I feel like the third episode dropped off a little bit in quality, which disappointed me. The show's not fucking filmed in Japan. Yeah. It is a Japanese US co-production, and Hiroyuki Sanada, the fucking guy who's in a lot of Hollywood movies, John Wick.
Most recently, John Wick 4.
He was Scorpion in the new Mortal Kombat remake, 47 Ronin, all that guy. He's an amazing dude, actor, and he's like your new Toshirô Mifune. He's actually playing Toshirô Mifune's role in the original 1980 version of Shogun, and he co-produced it. So anytime he's not acting, he's actually behind the camera and taking notes, and he is the full like showrunner of the show.
Oh, you like Toshirô Mifune movies, dude? Name four of his Kurosawa movies, dude.
Oh, dude, Samurai 1, 2, 3, and Seven Samurai, and Yojimbo, and Sanjuro.
And I'm saying Toshirô, is it Toshirô?
Toshirô Mifune.
Whatever, dude. Yeah. Did you ever see Throne of Blood?
No, I own it. I bought it on Criterion recently. I didn't watch it yet, though.
Because of the scene with the arrows, huh? Have you seen that shit?
No.
Have you seen, like, a clip of it?
Maybe I have, yeah.
It's Kurosawa's adaptation of Macbeth, and it's fucking dope!
That's right, yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah.
Like Kurosawa, I don't make films.
But we listened to that on the way up. We had a nice little WGT playlist of Bare Naked Ladies and Enigma.
Yeah.
And you know what they say about the young.
Yeah, yeah.
And Meshuggah for good measure.
Yeah, just one in there. Just yeah.
And it was the wrong one. Like Rational Gaze wasn't the one. I should have put something something more fucked up. But yeah, next time we gotta put more collectives. We gotta put Collective Soul.
I took a screenshot of some of the music you were playing because Courtney always gives me shit for playing music scores and soundtracks in the car because that's not like, you know, that's not like fun driving music with a couple, you know. And then I had to take a picture because I got in the car and you're fucking playing Oppenheimer music. And I was like, that's right. See, I'm not alone, bitch. You know, like,
Yeah. Destroyer of Worlds. Yeah. Great track was on there. That's the best track of 2023.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
Big hit.
It's huge with the kids.
So Shogun is dope.
Shogun is dope. It's just like I was saying real quick. Third episode, like you could tell, it's filmed in a soundstage. Like there's a lot of sea stuff, like on ships.
Oh, I don't.
And I'm just like, bro, the water's like too still. Like, it doesn't feel like the boat's rocking. It just feels too static.
It's like they filmed it at Pirates of the Caribbean.
It really did. The third episode specifically. But the first two, holy fuck.
It's so don't watch it, is what you're saying. You wouldn't. No,
just kidding. Just like Dune 2 for this guy.
It's great writing.
He doesn't like it.
It's, yeah, Dune 2, man, fucking
sucks. So.
We can jump into that for a quick
minute. You saw
Dune. Well, I was going to say, but in stark contrast to Shogun, I was watching The Last Samurai today.
What, man? That's fucking Edward what motherfucking Zwick.
It's not good, man.
I've still never seen it.
I kind of had like, I don't know. I had some memory of it being decent, but it's trash. And it's like offensive at the same time.
What, is it like a white savior narrative, dude?
Yeah, dude.
I haven't seen it since I was a kid. And I was like, this is a white savior narrative. No, I'm kidding.
You know what else?
Jacob as a child. Yeah. White savior narrative. Yeah.
You know what else is accused of being a white savior narrative, but is in fact a warning against messianic figures?
Yeah, accused by idiots. Yeah.
Idiots!
Yeah.
Dune 2, dude. So you saw it twice.
Yes, so I saw it once before our trip to LA, and I jumped the gun a little bit. Maybe I just didn't have the right viewing experience, but I thought it was epic. It was IMAX. But I didn't like it as much.
You
as
had a bad one. Attitude, man.
You were,
dude. I honestly was disappointed in you.
Yeah, and then I did see it again in Dolby, not IMAX, but Dolby for the sound quality alone. I was like bummed, like, oh, I'm gonna lose 40% of the picture. It's not IMAX. Holy fuck. I will say that this is my number one greatest Dolby experience I've ever had in theaters. I've seen at least 30 to 40 Dolby movies, and it's one of the best, actually. The best. And that shit fucking blew my mind. I would see it in Dolby over IMAX any day. Up close, you know, just feel completely immersed. I'm seeing it a third time this weekend, and I don't want to overhype it. I mean, fucking, it's really like all the praise, man. It's true. It's fucking, it is one of the greatest science fiction films of this generation. I mean, there are some great ones, and it's funny because they all come from Denis Villeneuve. Fucking Blade Runner.
Hell yeah, dude.
Denis Villeneuve.
I thought you said from Guineaville. I'm like, dude, you don't need to talk shit about Italians here, man. No,
this fucking Quebec ass dude.
Quebecois.
Wow, what a movie, man. I don't want to talk too much about it. Jorge, you really got to see it.
I will. Probably this week.
It's got this is the closest we've had a gentleman to get to the scale and fun of, like, James Cameron, but at the same time, like, have the full-on, like, artistry of, like, fucking Kubrick or some shit. Just, you know?
Implying Cameron has no artist. No, just
but you know what I mean, though.
True, like, Lies is pure.
There's moments of epic scale, and then you have shit without spoiler, like the Water of Life, and it's like, oh, like the fucking score and the music. It's like, goddamn. Like, there's some Jonathan Glazer moments where I'm like, bro, this is not like general audience type of movie moment.
No, like, it's fucking, it's got. It's very similar in that sense to, it's him and Nolan making these great, artistically worthy blockbuster fucking entertainments. It's the kind of stuff where it goes against he's been having a lot of interviews recently, no shit, Villeneuve, saying that, people's attention spans are shorter in the internet and the TikTok videos. That being said, because the younger generation is on TikTok all day and stuff like that, they do want substantial experiences and entertainment, and they're ready to have that in a theater.
Yeah.
And also, you grow, you know, a kid grows out of a TikTok thing. Eventually you do want something more substantial. So it's not just like,
I think he's single-handedly swaying this younger generation in their appreciation for the art form of cinema.
Single-handedly. Like, don't forget the real one, dude. Nolan.
Yeah,
no, I mean, hey, wait a minute! Already, you turn this quickly?
I mean,
no, they're both little. No,
they're both great. One's
and Cameron.
Well, one's just more. One's more consistent than the other one. Let's just say
it's easier to buy Nolan. A ticket for Dune 2 than Oppenheimer. I mean, for an average kid, for an average kid, like, they'd probably be turned off just by the word Oppenheimer and it being a history movie. So they're gonna be ignorant not buy a ticket, but they're gonna buy a ticket for Dune 2 because they're like, oh, it sounds cool.
A lot of kids saw Oppenheimer though because of Barbenheimer, and they ended up liking Oppenheimer more.
Fucking awesome.
So that was like fucking Trojan horse.
Yeah, and I feel like people bought tickets to Dune 2 thinking it was going to be...
Action fest.
Yeah, an action fest. And it wasn't the most action... It's not an action-packed movie, but I'm sure they came out with an appreciation, more of an appreciation for that art form. And, like, it sounds so fucking cheesy, but I'm like... There's, like, 5 points in the movie where I'm like, this is cinema.
It's not fucking... No, I've seen it once so far. I cannot... This is it, dude. I can't wait to see it again. Sophia and I loved it. We looked at each other, like, 7 or 8 times, just, like, with fucking awe. And I mean, again, I don't want to say too much. Jorge hasn't seen it. But, like, I will say this. The character arc of Paul Atreides, I haven't read the books or anything. Yeah, yeah. Which I think, for me, it helps in this sense, because I'm not comparing it to the source material. Which is a level of kind of like freedom from that.
It's good,
In that one sense. Mm-hmm. But the character arc of Paul Atreides is like up there.
Especially when you go from part one to the end of part two.
It's like fucking, yeah, dude, it's like Michael Corleone. It's like an extremely complicated fucking character. By the end of this fucking movie, like, he's something else. And like, the cast is fucking amazing. Yeah. It has some of the best production design choices and costume design and atmosphere I think that I've ever seen in any movie.
Yeah, and I kind of slept on the score for the part two at first, and then after watching Dolby, like, I'm obsessed with the music. Like, this, it's actually better than the first one. I thought the first one was fantastic.
Well, because I think Hans has more themes to fuck with now. Because, the Water of Life scene, I do remember that part. And that shit's overwhelming, like, with the music.
It really, like, treads, like, 2001.
And when he gets to the South and, like, does that speech, that shit fucking hits so hard. I've only seen it the one time, but I was like, this is amazing.
No, I mean, there's obviously, because it's an adaptation, there's going to be so much... world building that's lost.
Yeah.
But he really captured the entire theme and intention and spirit of the Frank Herbert's Dune, like the first book alone, like perfectly. Like he's like, oh, I'm going to cut the fat and I just want to focus on this one message of the film.
Yeah.
And does it just flawlessly, especially with huge changes with Chani, which I won't get into, but her character has zero agency in the book. She's just like agrees with everything and
there's people online like, she was so ride or die in the book. I'm like, now I know. Tell me you're an idiot without telling me.
like
especially, you know, saying the word ride or die.
Reading Dune saying ride or die. Like, just stop.
Yeah.
You know?
The changes are actually brilliant. Like, they really are. Like, there are moments in the book where I'm like, this is why it is considered to be the hardest sci-fi to adapt. But he really pulled it off by just focusing on one true message of the book.
Last thing I'll say about it, it's been a long time since I've fanboyed about a particular sequence as much as I am already in my head on one viewing with the Getty Prime situation.
You like that?
It's fucking like 30 minutes. Like,
yeah, and that's what's weird. I talk shit about it after my first watch. I was like, Austin Butler's like barely in the movie. And I watch it a second time. I'm like, oh no, he's in it for like a half hour, dude. Well, like,
yeah, and it's, I think, yeah, that's why I remembered what you said while I was watching it. And it's like, that's the thing though. Like, again, I think you're immersed in the literature. You're like playing the game.
It went by so fast too the first time.
Yeah, but they spend a good 30 minutes there and it's fucking nightmarish and like gorgeous at the same time. And I just kept looking at this movie like, what the fuck?
You finally see, like, you get a little bit in the first part one, but you finally see the H.R. Giger influence.
Fuck yeah.
Like crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So Dune 2 podcast, complete.
Until next week.
Yeah. That's all. Just Shogun and Dune 2. That's it. Nothing else for me.
Freaking Star Trek Next Generation and X-Files continues with Sophia and I.
Mm-hmm.
Not much to say.
Very good. Very good.
We're on season 4 of Next Generation. She's loving it. I love it. X-Files, I'm actually getting more into it. And I was fucking... I need to say this on the show. Like, I mentioned it to you guys, I think... I don't know if I mentioned it on the previous show. Fucking Scully.
You hated her.
She has fucking issues. Like, dude, it's really ridiculous now. I'm on episode, like, 22 of the first season. Because there's, like, 25 fucking episodes.
It's a shitload of content.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, I'm in it now. She fucking just saw some shit. And then, like, the next episode, it's like, oops, start over. Like, what the fuck? Like, it's completely ridiculous. And the fact that they string this out for, like, 10 or, like... It's like, dude, what happened last time? Was he making shit up last time? It's fucking dumb. And yeah. I'm gonna keep watching it. And some of the episodes though, there's these couple writers in particular, like this guy's last name is Wong or something. Don't look at me like that. No, but it is. He's considered one of the better writers of the series. I started noticing. I'm like, what's the common denominator here? It's that motherfucker.
Okay.
And it's also that director who later did Disturbing Behavior, which we just did an episode on, but not very good. But he does some good fucking X-Files episodes.
Okay.
It's fun. What are you watching? David Nutter. That's that homie's name.
I don't think I've watched anything of any... No, we can move along.
What about Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live? Are you going to watch that?
No.
I think I'm going to... I'm talking to...
Oh, you're going
to
do it.
I'm going to watch Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live with no context...
About anything else that's happened in the last decade?
I've only seen the first two episodes of The Walking Dead.
Fuck. Wow.
That's like me jumping in a Fast and the Furious starting with 9. I was like, fuck it. Let's go.
Yeah, because I keep seeing all this nothing but praise for this shit.
Yeah.
So I'm going to come at it like with no... I want to see what's up here.
Mm-hmm. For there's nothing but praise for the new season of The Walking Dead?
It's fucking great.
What?
Even that other one was pretty well received.
I mean, Rick Grimes is back, so that's like the big thing because everyone loved Rick Grimes, and they feel like that was the
turning. Is he back as like a person?
Because he didn't like die in the show. He just like left. He got like on the other side of a bridge or something. Got picked up by some helicopter, and then
because
Coral
dies in the show, right?
I don't know. I don't.
Who fucking knows?
I have no idea.
I really don't.
But this story is basically a love story. It's Michonne and Rick trying to find each other through all this fucking apocalyptic world. It's
you just gotta like, get on board, man.
Oh, man,
everyone's watching it, dude.
You know what you did get on board with?
Just get back in, dude.
And what? We can't talk too long about it, but Night Country. Jorge watched Night Country.
Did we not talk about this on the...
You said you were starting it.
You watched it in like 2 days.
I did watch it in two days. So. Oh, I had started it and then I just fucking... I fiended the rest of it.
So I would highly recommend at least 90% of what this dude, the Reaper, on YouTube says... about Night Country, because it's like when you're listening to it, it's like fucking just nodding the whole time.
You basically become a misogynist just listening to it.
Well, I mean, dude, it's something else. Jacob still hasn't watched it, but I'm like fucking still kind of like in disbelief. Jorge watched the whole fucking season.
In 2.5 days. That shit was crazy.
And
I mainlined the fucking...
That is insane.
Yeah.
It's bad news.
It is bad news. Of all the things that have sucked, it is one of the worst.
And it is unfortunate. Yeah. It is an unfortunate turn of events for all involved.
Especially given what a fucking revelation that first season was.
Yeah. And what a revelation Tigers Are Not Afraid was.
Yeah.
I might as well throw that in there. It's not like, oh, we want to fucking dislike this. Like, no, I was excited about the prospect of all this. Yeah, the first
she season. Is not a good director.
Well, she definitely shouldn't be a showrunner for this shit. That's
but they gave her another season.
Hey, well, I'm ready to hate.
Bring on the zombies and ghosts.
And how it is right now, and with its IMDb scores hovering around the highest one is a mid to high 6, and the lowest is now about to go sub 5, being the finale. I mean, there's not that many misogynists on IMDb, so. Let it go another 2 years like this, at this current trajectory, and see how this goes for you if you come out with another season of trash.
Yep.
You see how that goes.
The new season's just going to start with What's-Her-Face walking into the snow, and then that's where it's going to begin.
With big, flat ass.
Someone's going to walk five meters into the snow and just die.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, that's dope.
But then
later on, I'm going to fall into the fucking ice and, like, you know, hypothermia is no big deal.
It's going to start with a Jodie Foster sex scene, guaranteed.
Oh, my God. That one we could probably do, like, a gif of.
That's probably why I'm scared to watch the show, dude.
That's in episode 2.
You know that moment in Forrest Gump where he makes the noises of his mom having sex with the principal? That's it right there, dude. Forrest Gump going,
It is kind of like that.
With Doctor Who.
Yeah, man, just take it little by little.
Maybe I just got to do it little by little.
Yeah, the first episode.
I just can't do that. You know me. I'm like obsessive with that shit. Once I start, I'm scared. I can't stop.
You've seen... See, have both of you seen every season? I mean, you haven't seen the fourth, obviously, but you've seen 1, 2, and 3.
I've seen 1, 2, and 3 a minimum of 5 times, and then 1 at least like 10 times.
Then you're obligated.
You're doing a disservice to yourself by not watching Night Country.
That's how scared I am.
Get like, out of Shogun. Trash Dune Part 2.
Yeah, dude.
Come down to earth with the rest of us with Madam Web.
You hated Dune 2 anyways, so, like, you know, it's...
Dude, I can't believe... Like, I'm waiting for you to see Madam Web and True Detective, dude.
I would love to see Madam Web in, like, a completely empty theater. Like, that would be fucking...
Shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, I should check. I need to check.
It's totally doable right check now, dude. Time,
especially now that fucking Dune 2 is out.
Give Stuckman a call. He'll probably meet you there.
Hell yeah. Do a 17-minute non-review. Yeah. Anyway.
It's retarded.
Yeah. That's what I mean. If he does that, then people like the Reaper become necessary. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
It's balanced.
Yeah, it's true. Any news we should get to, gentlemen? I thought you said you had news.
Well, we kind of went over on the pre-show, but yeah, just the year is beginning to take shape on the horror front.
Finally. It was a very slow first couple months.
And it is in general, like, with... But I think Imaginary comes out this month, which I don't have high hopes for. But later on this month also is Late Night with the Devil,
mm-hmm.
Which all three of us seem pretty fucking... Our interest is peaked.
Yeah.
The festival circuit last year, they got a lot of good reception. But then a couple that are on the horizon, too, are... I saw the TV Glow...
Yep.
From the director
of... Dude, it sounded like you were going to cry for a second there.
The TV Glow.
What the fuck?
From the director of We're All Going to the World's Fair. Did you ever see that one?
No.
Me either.
I wasn't sure how I felt about it.
Me either. Yeah. But now I want to watch it. The other one, though, is the ambient slasher.
Yeah.
This reinvention of the kind of slasher thing is being billed as... what's it called?
In a Violent Nature.
Right.
Yeah, so, I'm kind of liking these like indie direct-to-video horror movies. Kind of having whether or not you like them, getting a chance in theaters.
Yeah,
it's just a safe bet. Like I feel like there's no middle ground. It's like you got huge blockbusters like Dune 2, and then you have a lot of like now this is new, but like these Shudder like exclusives or Shudder produced or distributed horror movies being shown in theaters. One of them, the one we're talking about, is like one of the first.
Right.
And then you got Late Night with the Devil coming out in a couple weeks. And yeah.
Because
Terrifier's coming out in theaters again.
Oh, dude. So I can't wait for that shit to bomb.
Not
dude.
Even Terrifier 2. They're bringing back Terrifier 1 because that's what everybody wants. Yeah.
Damn. That's fucked up. Is Part 3 supposed to come out later this year?
It's got to be a Christmas.
I think,
release.
I think
it's
December.
Okay. Fucking Christmas. The only thing I am looking forward to is Jordan Peele's. Comes out on Christmas, I think.
I think that one initially and Robert Eggers' Nosferatu
they were
scheduled for the same
day.
They're
not anymore.
I think they shifted one of those around. Okay. I'm not sure if it's. I have a feeling if I'm remembering correctly, I think it's Jordan Peele's that moved.
Okay,
but we'll see.
Okay,
yeah. That's it.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break and we'll be right back to talk about a film. First horror film of the new horror film of the year, right?
Yes.
All right.
Jacob loved it.
We'll be right back.
No, but
no wonder they're skipping around.
No, listening to it made me realize, like, I don't think ever, because, you know, last time I listened to it, I was a teenager. I'm like,
yeah.
I think it's time that I actually sit down and absorb the whole thing start to finish, like, you know, how it's meant to be listened to.
It's not a casual listen.
No, it's not. No,
it's really not. That. It's like Dune 2.
Yeah,
like
Courtney and I, she fucking we were fucking peeking with our edibles, and we're like, let's just lay down and listen to the Under the Skin soundtrack.
Oh fuck!
And we listened to the whole thing beginning.
Dude, I drove around to that on the way to work the other day.
It is the fucking most beautiful thing ever. It's like perfect for work, for fucking trying to you can put it as background music to go to bed to study. It's like it's too good, man.
Michael Levi.
Yeah.
Guess what, gentlemen?
What?
We're fucking back.
We're back!
Oh, and we're going to talk about a little film. Little baby film.
I'm going to talk about a little Patreon.
Go right ahead.
www.patreon.com/whogoestherepodcast is where you can donate $1, $3, $5, $10, $20, up to $50 so far. It can always go higher.
It can.
And you get exclusive content. We had a lot of good stuff for this episode, I think. And you get the episodes early. You also get exclusive episodes that are only available to Patreon, which we need to do. We're going to do that fucking hackers episode.
That's yep. Dude. And what's the next Hans pick?
Bloody Body. I always fuck up on this name, but Japanese Evil Dead.
Japanese Evil Dead, which is fucking, I've seen the first 10 minutes of, so I'm very satisfied.
It's fantastic. With this pick. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're kind of jumping the shark on that one. Something.
But we're excited to do it.
Yes.
And yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. All right.
That's it.
That's it. So we watched 2024's, I guess, Stop Motion, a rated R horror film directed by Robert Morgan, also written by Robert Morgan and Robin King, starring Aisling Francoise.
I love her.
Therica Wilson Reed, Stella Gonet.
What's wrong with these names?
Tom York. Tom York is in this movie
without an H. Oh, what? Bummer.
Man, he found time to do this movie while he's making music, dude, for The Smile, dude.
While he's wearing horrible clothes, dude.
Fuck, dude. What?
I saw a meme of him the other day. You know, he's been rich a long, long time.
He has been rich a long, long time. Longer than he's...
Than we needed him to.
Yeah.
He could have... Never mind.
Well...
No, I you know. Who wants to talk shit about Tom York?
Well...
You do?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, good. I think he's a wonderful human being.
Okay, me too.
Jacob...
I'm happy he found love again, too. He's in a relationship, but his wife... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
What'd you think of Stop Motion, buddy?
Oh, Stop Motion. Well, one, it's really fucking cool to see this type of medium on the big screen. I do like stop motion animation. I'm not like an expert in it, but I love that art medium, and I think what this director's work on YouTube is fucking fantastic, and I've only looked into it after this movie, but you know, I just him and I appraise the technical shit in this of blending live action with stop motion, but in the end all of my favorite parts were stop motion and there just wasn't enough of it, and we're talking about this film in like a post Mad God world. And maybe my expectations are a little too high, and that's my own fault. But when there is stop motion, I think it's just too little too late for me personally. But with that said, I actually kind of want to revisit it, and I'll get back to why. But
don't Stuckman this.
Yeah, no, I know what goes into making a movie, so you know, I don't want to shit on it, but no, I'm kidding. it was all right. I wanted more because. The stop motion aspects are so impressive, and it's my type of aesthetic and tone, and I like the bleak themes. But I just feel like him as a director, he's done so many short films. I think going this full feature length, I don't know if he's done other full feature length films, but I don't know if it's there yet for me. But yeah.
All I can say is, all around me are familiar. Just that sad, dude, that you said those things about this movie. I really, really like this whole the whole thing.
Oh, I'm
the stop motion stuff aside. While impressive, and seeing like unbelievable stop motion on a giant screen is always super fun. I
especially if you like Tool videos.
Yeah, dude. I mean, yeah, exactly. I really like the film. I think there's the core of the human story that's being told here is while it's not expansive, I think it's really well done. With the exception of like one or two of the characters in this movie, I think the acting is pretty great. The tone is spot on for the entire time, as dreary as fuck as it is.
British as fuck.
It is British as fuck. There is a party scene that I thought was really, really competently done. The trip scene I thought was really, really, really cool. Mm-hmm. I don't have too many negative things to say about it, but I think we'll get into them as we continue.
All right. I pretty much concur with Jorge. I don't think it's a... you know, if we're going on a star scale, right? I'd say this for me, this is a solid 3.5. Okay. I'm okay with it. And here's why. Obviously, the stop motion stuff is impressive. I think the name is apt.
What's your movie about, dude?
That's what I mean. That stuff like that. And I know I say that shit a lot, but dude, it's like, that's fucking important, dude. Like, that almost drags it down to a 3 to me. Like, because it's like,
just the name by itself. Call it
something else. Yeah. But it's about, like, the craft that she inherited from her mother and all that. I don't think, regardless how good the stop motion stuff is, I don't think it would have mattered if the sound design wasn't as good as it was. Mm-hmm. The sound design was really fucking cool.
It's juicy. It's great.
Right. So there was craft all over this fucking movie. And the decisions about, like, putting meat on the puppets and fucking, like, ash and, like, quasi-ritualistic stuff, but not, like, overt and pretentiously doing that. That was fucking cool. And really, honestly, I found a lot of that pretty repelling. There's some good old-fashioned body horror in this. And again, none of that would work to me either if it wasn't sold by the main actress, who I liked a lot in The Nightingale. I hope to see her in a lot more stuff. And she has a very hard-to-pronounce name that I haven't memorized yet.
Aisling Franciosi.
Yeah, I thought she carried the film. And the stuff, like, the stuff, it not all of it fucking hit the way it wants to, I don't think. And, like, as a narrative form, I could see what Jacob's saying. Like, I don't know if it's quite there yet, but I was... it was a lot more story and a lot more compelling on a narrative level than what I was expecting.
Yeah. I think I went in thinking it was going to be a straight up horror movie with stop motion animation, but it was a lot farther than that. There was a lot more compelling themes. I could see why you might have liked it, because it's basically the Devil's Candy, but better.
Right.
You know, and I was looking at this article of, like, a list of, like, movies about struggling artists, like horror movies about struggling artists with, like, creative block. And it does follow, if you want to call it a trope, that type of trope. I don't know. For me, I was, like, seeing this. Some of the journey, I really liked the third act, but I thought the first two kind of dragged a little bit, just watching this 90-minute film of a woman with a creative block. You know, I was like, I don't know what, if there were moments where the beats felt a little repetitive.
I don't think it's a creative block. I just don't think she was ever creative to begin with.
Yeah, it is a tragedy.
And I think she's dealing with that. You know, she's been dealing with that her entire life. I mean, I don't know. Maybe because I have such a shit relationship with my parents, I resonate with this early stuff that she's got going on with her mom and her overbearing bullshit, and you know, she's struggling to get out from her mother's shadow, who is
to individuate herself.
Who's a famous stop motion animator in this world. And that's the other thing too. This movie has done a really good job of creating a world where people are still watching stop motion animation, and you know what I mean? Like, no,
the stop motion click.
Like she's friends with a bunch of stop motion animators who fucking go to a bar and watch their shit.
And they know her because of her mother.
Right. Shit. So that, like, cool. That already is, like, fantastical to me, but it's never
a little niche.
It's never overtly in your face about it. So her relationship with her mom and her struggling with being at all creative is something, I mean, not that it's something that I deal with myself, but yeah, man, I know what it's like to have a yearn to be good at something and never quite getting there.
And that's, to bounce off that was my biggest criticism, not the mother, but the fact that I wanted more of it, because I actually thought one of the strongest performances was the mother, because it totally unsettled me, and how the mother is, because of her hands, she has, like, rheumatoid arthritis or something like that, right?
Yep.
And she can't do the stop motion anymore, and she was a famous stop motion animator, so she is almost controlling her daughter.
It's even her nickname for her. Yeah. Like her little puppet, her little, yeah. She had, there's a, some British term.
Yeah, they call it a poppet.
A poppet.
Yeah, and that's almost like they blur, the director actually himself said, I blurred the lines between poppet and puppet and because she's manipulating the daughter. And I wanted more of that. And unfortunately, in the first act, after that, the mother kind of takes a back seat without spoiling it. Yeah. And instead, we get this little girl. And the little girl is what killed a lot of this film for me. And I really wanted more of the mother. If the mother came back in any form, you know, I'm trying not to spoil it because I really do like some of the story. But instead of the mother, all of a sudden we get this new character of this little girl. And maybe it might be a representation of, you know, her childhood or something like that. Yeah.
It's the stifled inner child.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with, like, repressed childhood shit. And I just, I did not care for...
That's because you have a functional home life with your parents.
I don't want to harp on it too much, but that could have an aspect of why you don't necessarily resonate with that
stuff. But I do like the Babadook kid.
You're like, I do.
Maybe he feels it was a little forced on top of that, too. Right, but yeah. Speaking of liking the Babadook, you know,
the director did Nightingale, which this actress was,
yeah. Well, the actress was in Nightingale, and then the lady who directed, what's her name, Jennifer Kent?
Yes,
she did Nightingale and Babadook, and Babadook is Jorge's favorite movie, and this is Jacob's favorite movie, so it all works out.
Yeah.
I like all of those,
I like them all, dude.
I like all of them, but what the fuck were we talking about? I'm sorry about that.
Childhood trauma.
Oh, yeah, my mom wasn't overbearing and all that stuff. We have our other issues, and everything's been cleared up, which is great, but my dad was fucking overbearing.
Yeah.
Literally. And so I did relate to the stuff about control and perfectionism and constantly. And like you said, it's not really there a lot of the movie, but it's there enough to have the lingering ghost of it. It's what runs her. It runs her fucking life. And I think, too, it shows, like, in very overt ways, like the themes are front and center, which could be goofy, but it handles them pretty, like, fucking adeptly, I think. Because you see, she starts to fall apart once she has the freedom from the mother. She doesn't know what to do without someone else controlling her.
Yeah, the film ultimately feels, I'm trying not to like spoil too much, but it feels definitely more like a tragedy rather than like some like redemptive kind of arc. It's in the end, it does become like a full horror movie because of just the tragedy of it and like this downward. You like downward spiral, dude?
Well. I mean, we can get to the end. The end, too, there's some open-endedness there.
Yeah.
But it is, like, that's mainly just because it's some... You could interpret the symbolism a few different ways. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, with shutting herself in the chest, it's like, you take over now. Like, I have no... I can't run the fucking show. Yeah.
She doesn't have agency anymore.
Yeah.
At least that's how I took it.
Absolutely. And then, you know, that's getting into spoilery territory, but it's like the chest that she shuts herself into has that golden lining, which is like this gaudy like fucking choice, which is cool because it feels
it was basically representative of casket.
Yeah,
and
a womb a bit. Yeah.
Okay,
and then a casket, and then earlier on when she's running from the dude, the Ash Man.
Fantastic.
Yeah, she tries to like crawl into there and it's that golden fucking lining again. Mm-hmm. So she's trying to get there and she was deprived of it. And later on that same like design feature, that golden freaking lining thing comes back, which was like, you know, those kind of things, it hits me different. And Jorge mentioned the party and it's like a hallucinogenic trip and it's all erotic and it's cool. And then, so correct me if I'm wrong, she didn't take the fucking...
Yeah. She didn't take the LSD. She was just fucking...
Psychosis.
Yeah.
Just going into psychosis.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought those themes, they kept me captivated enough. When you mentioned the slowness, I do agree with you with some of it, particularly in the midsection.
Yeah. Because in the end, so basically in the plot, she's trying to find her inner... creative, you know, imagination. Yeah. And this little girl who just walks into her life, kind of gives her ideas of how to work on her next project, and she becomes obsessive with it. And then kind of like a horror bedtime story, there's like this: the first night this happens, the second night this happens, and there's this guy called the Ash Man, and it feels like a total boogeyman story, and it's great, and it builds tension. But I felt, yeah, like the beats in between these nights, mm-hmm. it just kind of slowed down. I'm like, okay, now we're just getting to night two.
I will agree with you. The stuff with the boyfriend does great. Like, there's a couple good moments where they're at the, they go to have breakfast together, and there's some creepy stuff happening in the background. But by and large, the boyfriend scene and his sister, I think, is the other one.
The blonde chick.
That stuff I could take or leave. It doesn't add or detract too much, but
it provides that outside context, so it's not just totally.
It's insulated. Not just completely. Yeah. But some of that stuff needs to. I guess editing isn't the right word.
It's not as engaging as the other stuff.
Yeah.
It provides that context, but it's not. They're not particularly interesting or multidimensional characters. Well, definitely not the blonde lady, right?
I just don't believe it's a little too far fetched for me to think that her artwork could be stolen in complete wholesale, and there would be no consequences from it.
I'm a little questionable about it because I was talking to Hi Sophia about it too. I got some Black Swan vibes here and there.
Yep.
It gets a little fever.
Yeah, that's great comparison.
Yeah, fever dreamish because this chick is stealing her stuff, and mm-hmm. and there's even a part where she's like, "This is mine. This is my story." She gets pissed at the inner child,
yeah.
trying to push her out, like and take ownership. You know, and the more she does that, tries to get control, the worse things get. You mm-hmm. know, but so yeah, I'm like, I'm watching that, and I feel the same way you did, Jorge. I was kind of like, you know. Would this really happen like this? But then it's offset to me, though, by, like, they have this other animator, and this dig at, like, fucking Wallace and Gromit. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, like, it's like, fuck, man. Like, I like Wallace and Gromit, but it's like I could see from the underground indie stop motion fucking scene. They're like...
That apparently is huge.
Yeah. Well, it's huge in this movie, you know. So if I take it as this fantastical universe mm-hmm. where it's like this this community like that, it works best like that if I don't think about it too groundedly.
Yeah.
Oh, the Ashman thing, that's one of the thematic things for me that I was actually unclear on or wasn't really explicit enough. So I noticed her dad's not in the picture, right? And also, so what she conjures up as the symbol of her fucking stuff is a man. And it's the Ash Man, right? And so, but it's never overtly talked about what it is. And I'm wondering too, the first night, the second night, the third night, it's like, is this a childhood trauma that occurred? And is she trying to work it out? But then there's a part where her inner child says, on the second night, this happens. And then she's like, no, it doesn't. I decide what happened. And that's people like, that's denial.
Trying to retell the story.
Yeah, but then it's like, also, I get to retell the story of what happened, you know? But it's like, do you though? Because it did fucking happen. And so, and again, if that's supposed to be implied, like, it's almost not clear enough for me. But I do notice there's no fucking talk of her dad. Mm-hmm. Where's the dad at? And et cetera. And it's a man. And then the guy who fucking directed this, obviously, he's a stop motion guy. And so he's probably at least, you know, he's an artist. So he's like, I want to work out some of my stuff in this movie, but not fucking have it be like autobiographical.
Yeah.
Not have it be a man. So the first thing he does is like, let's switch genders, go to a woman, all this stuff. So there's no telling what's what from his personal life and what's not.
Yeah.
You know, but, and it's like, is that why the fucking Ash Man is a man? Do you get what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I'm asking, what is the Ash Man? What does he signify? What does he symbolize? And is that fucking, like, related at all to her father, her absence of a father?
That's true. Yeah, they didn't touch on it once, but the yeah. Ash Man is a brilliant fucking villain in this, like, if you want to call him a villain. But this entity that she creates as a puppet, and
yeah.
to see, like, stop motion or at least practical effects of like a full size version of him was fucking crazy wild. Awesome. Yeah.
I forgot about that in the room.
Yeah. The one glaring thing that I guess we need to chat about is this the symbolism of the egg. And second off, the application of the egg in this film. I had a little bit of trouble because I couldn't tell if it was a stop motion thing or if it was just purely CGI.
I wrote a note. I was like, wow, a movie called Stop Motion opens with a CGI egg.
Well, that was
a stop motion motherfucking egg.
Was it stop motion? Was the actual egg stop motion?
The little blue gold like CGI looking egg in the very beginning.
The fuck was stop motion egg?
I don't know. Okay, well, in any case, I guess what I think is trying to be explored here is that like her you know maybe what you're saying is correct, like whatever the egg or the Ashman is giving her the egg was like the ultimate, like that was the very pinpoint of the trauma.
Yeah, that relegated her inner child to be interior.
Yeah.
And not to come out again until the death of the mother. It's like, what does that have to do with the mother? Well, the mother's a controlling person, and also...
And she may have been complicit
exactly.
in her abuse.
If she was aware, she was aware of it and all that. That's what I mean. It's interesting that we can even go there with none of the info. It's about what's not mentioned that you can even like fucking extrapolate anything. So that's either very like very good or very, very bad. You know what I mean?
Both, right?
Yeah.
Schrodinger's egg.
But yeah, it's not. It's an intentional decision though to exclude any mention of a fucking dad or presence of a dad.
Yeah.
Right. And then like when we go to the themes of like artistic stuff, it goes. It's like her mom and her hands. Like she can't fucking control the puppets anymore, so she controls her daughter to control the puppets. Mm-hmm. She's got several layers deep of control.
Yeah.
And that's it comes back like an act of creation. Like you want to fucking be able to have some access to a spontaneous idea and something like fucking authentic and of the moment and something real. But then it's like there's this other side to it where you need complete control over everything to get it right.
Yeah.
And it's like that dissonance between those two sides.
Yeah, they hammered in that theme perfectly in the you know first 10 minutes with the mother.
Yeah.
And those were the parts I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, it's not an art form that lends itself very very well to like
playing
jazz, so to speak, right?
No, like, every frame has to be accounted for.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Oh. So basically your reappraisal is 5 stars.
I probably enjoyed it less than you guys, but I didn't hate it. And I actually would totally recommend people to check it out. And if anything, this movie made me very interested in checking out his just sole stop motion, you know, work on his YouTube, which I know you're a little bit more familiar than
me. Yeah, he's been posting on YouTube, I think, for about 7 to 10 years. I mean, look, dude, if what's coming out of YouTube is directors like this guy and Raka Raka doing their thing, like I'm all for it, man. As a directorial film debut, I think it's amazingly well done for what it is.
Yeah.
Not for what it is. It's a well done film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not mad. There's nothing for me to be mad at here, even in its moments of relative like slowness and dragging here and there. Again, I have to give. It wasn't just the stop motion was good. The thematic stuff was there. A lot of the fucking sound design was there. The lead actress was there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's pretty good.
Just don't call it stop motion.
Yeah. And, you know, and he ripped off Tool. You know what I mean?
True.
You could just watch Tool videos instead. Fuck this movie. Just kidding.
No, definitely go into this film... knowing it's a psychological horror movie that doesn't even feel like a horror movie for a minute. It has like one or two little moments, but I mean, it feels like a little bit like an indie drama in the beginning of this struggling artist, but then it does approach like full psychological horror territory, you know, very clearly in the second half. But I think going in knowing that would probably help But I mean, check out this guy's work. I think he's incredibly talented.
Yep,
for sure.
Big time.
And I feel like if you weren't a fan of this movie and you have watched it, and I recommend, I have an alternative that I actually recommend and I enjoyed more than this. If you want like bleak, surreal, psychological horror film about like repressed childhood,
Nightmare trauma. Before Christmas.
Exactly. No,
James and the Giant Peach.
It's this movie, Possum, that came out like 5 or 6 years ago, starring Sean Harris, that villain guy from.
I never saw that, but I've always heard about
it. Loved it. I've seen it like 3 times, and it's bleak. It's very atmospheric, and it's about a disgraced puppeteer who may or may not be a pedophile dealing with a bunch of shit, and he's living with his uncle, and he's a lot of creepy imagery. It feels very, at moments, kind of Lynchian, and I thought stop motion was going to kind of have that type of vibe, but it's a lot, stop motion is psychological horror, but a little bit more grounded in reality.
Yeah, it's a lot more literal, I think.
A lot more literal.
Lee.
So, yeah, if someone...
Basically, Possum, good version of this movie.
I enjoyed it more, but I would say better.
And this movie better than Dune 2. Oh.
Dune 2, worse than Killers of the Flower Moon.
Wow. That's saying something.
Yes, even though I'm seeing it for the third time. Yes, no.
You know they're playing it at fucking the Ruben H. Fleet Center?
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to see Dolby, and I want to see it like that.
Definitely should go, they should play it at the Vegas Sphere.
Fuck, dude, I can't wait when that's like, if we stick around long enough as a species where that becomes like sustainable and they just start fucking showing movies there.
At the Sphere, they showed one. It was a nature documentary directed by Darren Aronofsky. Mm-hmm. It was like filmed in like 16K or some shit.
Yeah. And it's like $100 a ticket. It's not cheap, dude. And then the U2 show is like $300 or $400 a ticket. It's crazy. And
there's no ass to ass.
No ass to ass.
That's a bummer.
They should show Requiem for a Dream in the Sphere.
And on the outside, it's just a big, giant, gaping asshole.
It's a fucking mass suicide inside the sphere with the fucking Requiem for a Dream. That would be dope. Never mind.
What, the mass suicide?
Box? Yeah! Right,
I got you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. I highly recommend this movie.
I definitely recommend. I think, yes, we're off to an auspicious start for 2024.
Thank God. We finally saw something that was worth a goddamn.
Next week, or next episode, I guess it's imaginary time. So we go into Hollywood. We go to Hollywood.
What if we get smiled, though, dude? What if it's, like, fun?
That would be great. And it would also be great if it was just complete trash, because I'm ready for
it. Yeah, but not middling-ass Megan shit, though.
Don't fucking do the middling thing.
Yeah.
Don't do the fucking boogeyman thing. That's not even... That shit sucks. Can we just say it now?
We want more smile. We want more surprises.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I want fucking straight up trash.
Yeah.
Don't give me like, wow, that was a good idea. I'm going to be real disappointed if I'm like, you know what? I had some good ideas.
Oh, I know you had some merit.
It's fucked up.
It is fucked up.
Yeah.
Because you want to hate it, but
yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to hate something, watch True Detective Night Country and hate it. And if you're listening to this and you really liked it.
Until the end.
You're wrong.
All right, well, this is Jorge signing out.
This is Reed.
This is Odesu!
Odesu!
Signing off.
I'm just going to put the sound of Jodie Foster having sex at the end of this episode.
Please do it.
Bye, idiots.
I'm not going to worry wrinkles in my brow. Nothing's ever going to be all right, no how. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive.